What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Barely Legal and Web3. I'm your host, Jamelia Greer, bringing you the latest in Web3 every week with a legal twist. So hold on to your digital wallets and let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode of Barely Legal and Web3. Today's guest is making supply and demand look cool again. Welcome to the show, Head of Tokenomics of Animoca Brands, Mo Ezzeldine. Mo, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here today.
Yeah, and I'm glad you could make it. I mean, we were just chatting before. You're from London, and now you're here in Dubai.
I am. Sun, heat, what can I say? It beats the greatness in London right now. It is great to be here, and I'm excited for today's conversation.
For sure. And, you know, I mean, part of what is so interesting about your background, this tokenomics, and most people really don't even understand what tokenomics is. So could you talk to us a little bit about tokenomics and your role at Animoca Brands?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still figuring out what tokenomics is myself some of the time. But no, all jokes aside, I mean, if we decompose the word, it's token and economics. And as you said, it's supply and demand. It's behavioral economics, but it's fundamentally the different layers within an ecosystem. And what we've seen within the Web3 or the crypto space is there's a lot of personas, and I'll be referring to personas a lot because I feel different people wear different hats within the industry, but there's a main persona, at least on the retail level, that they're just after return on investment, ROI. How can I turn X into 10X, into 100X? And it's given the space a bad name because there's been nefarious activities within there. But I guess to bring it back to tokenomics, it's one of the core layers, especially when we're looking at token economies, is how can we design an ecosystem that's sustainable, but also something that can scale. So the initial stakeholders or personas within that, we look at the different interactions between them and where that supply and demand can come from. What that looks like is the pie chart that everyone sees, the allocations, the vesting schedules, which is the first part of tokenomics, but it's only a drip in the ocean. Or I have two young kids, so I'm going to take a Shrek quote. And it's tokenomics is like an onion, and there are many different layers, and that's one of the layers that are there. But fundamentally, a lot of the work that we do is focused on the zero to one. So it's sorting out the initial supply, where the demand will come from. But then also, we have a Web2, in some instances, Web2 businesses, and then trying to leverage digital assets in Web3. And there's a big disparity between people who want to play games, for example, versus people who want to hold digital assets. So how do you design for an economy where you have very different personas within that? So there are some exact sciences, so to speak, and then the rest of it is more of an art from that aspect.
That's so interesting. I mean, and you talk about exact science, and I think that really is what it is. It's a science of it. It's an art and a science. I have a background in economics as well, and I saw you actually have math and statistics in your background.
Yes, I have 2 degrees in mathematics, and I've also very big in it. I have a degree in education as well. So I guess a bit on my background is that went into finance, quit within the second week because I couldn't find the ethos alignment. So it's like, what do I do? And I thoroughly enjoyed adding value. Education seemed to be a natural pull, and that was my calling for a long time until I discovered crypto.
Yeah.
And then I made and lost a lot of money in 2017, 2018. And being a teacher, you're always taught to reflect on your practice. So I applied that reflection, and it's like, why have I lost this money outside of the scams that were in the space? Which isn't a bad reflection of the technology, which is a bad reflection of the actors in the space and the lack of regulation. That's we're getting better, but at least at that point in time, I mean, ICOs were the biggest thing in crypto back then. But upon reflecting, it was some of these businesses has raised money and they were still generating revenue or building at the very least in the Web2 or the conventional sense. Well, the token price was down 99% and I couldn't wrap my head around why. And that's when I discovered there was a lack of this token economics or tokenomics in the space. So as any curious problem solver, I went down the rabbit hole and re-emerged maybe 9 to 12 months later with what I thought was a much better understanding of tokenomics. I just started dabbling within that layer of crypto economics, so to speak. And then fast forward to 2021, I was on Animoca Brands' radar, had really constructive conversations with Yat, the chairman and co-founder, and I was offered the opportunity to come in and lead the tokenomics department. I founded the tokenomics department, which looking back has been an amazing journey with lots of learning, and we're still learning. But then the maths background, it really gives us perspective on like the theoretical side of things, so hypothesis testing or coming up with a hypothesis and then testing that. Given the nature of blockchain, when you put something on chain, you cannot take it back. So it's also being very careful with what the initial hypothesis is versus the data that's out there versus what we can actually do. And we're still in a mode of advancing the technology that's there. I think we're in a much stronger position, at least technologically, from where we were 3 or 4 years ago.
You know, Mo, talking to you is like a breath of fresh air. Because, no, really. And I really think that, you know, those who are not in Web3 really need to hear this type of conversation. When you talk about things like the scientific method, you talk about data, using data with results, you talk about personas in an economy, this is sort of the precision and sort of the exactness that I think a lot of people who are not in Web3, and when I say in Web3, I mean like, you know, the people who are on Twitter quite a bit, using, you know, talking about which token's going up and which token's going down, they need to hear, they need to understand. And, you know, I wonder if that is purely because of your background and the focus on education and sort of this desire to go back to the scientific method. And do you see sort of a trend for other companies to start to really get back to the basics of why do certain things work? Why do certain things not work?
It's a very interesting question. I think for a lot of companies, especially when we talk about first-time founders, there is a catch-22. Do I build something sustainable and maybe miss out on the narrative at the time where I can raise a lot of funds? Or do I raise a lot of funds and then worry about everything else later on? So there is some friction there. But then I also feel, because it's quite money-oriented, that tends to be the core driver. And for better or for worse, we still haven't moved away from that. Obviously, with us, the focus is on building something sustainable. So at Animoca Brands, our ethos really is building Blue Ocean, building together, where you have ownership of your digital property rights, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And again, I can keep going with what we stand for. But in doing so, that's where the data aspect becomes so important. But what we also know is that the data points haven't been very clean over the last few years. And there are lots of different complexities to take into account. And with any data model, rubbish in, rubbish out. So it's also being careful and cognizant that some of the modeling that's there, more often than not, is wrong. But what we've seen over the past maybe 12 to 18 months, especially in the bear market, let's say, where it's been full of builders, and that speculative layer hasn't been there in the same way it's been when there's been a lot of excitement and the price action has been going in the right way. So there are cleaner data points now. The technology is in a better place where we can actually be making more informed decisions, where before maybe that wasn't the case. So I think we're not there yet. We're definitely not there yet, but we're getting a step closer every time. And as we start to build more sustainable layers that are in there, as we tie in the revenue side or the Web2 side with the tech side, it makes more sense. And I guess I'll go on a very quick tangent.
Yeah.
And we all use the internet. How many of us actually know how the internet works? Not many. Yet with crypto, with Web3, we've been selling the technology side of things. The majority of users out there do not care about the back end. You don't download Instagram because it's built in JavaScript or C++. No, you download.
That's for sure.
You download Instagram because it's trendy. That's where the network effects are. I mean, I remember this is something I use in conferences all the time. WhatsApp, I think a few years back, was brought out by Facebook, Meta. Mm-hmm. And there was a big furore in the crypto scene. Our data is not safe. Our data is not safe. Download Signal, download Telegram. The majority of people in Web3 still use WhatsApp, even though they know their data is not safe. Why? Because that's what the network effects are. Why will I be in a different ecosystem or on a different platform if no one else is there? It doesn't make sense. So I think there are other aspects we have to take into account as well. And as an industry, we're not there yet, I don't feel. So it's just changing the positioning. And I guess like ChatGPT is an excellent example where it's a seamless front end. There's a free version, there's a paid version, and that's it. And all I really need to focus on is my prompt engineering, how good my prompts are to get the results that I need. It's as easy as that. No one understands how the LLM works in the back end.
Yeah.
People don't care. They just care, how can I come in and use something? And I think there's that's becoming more of a realization within the industry as well.
Do you think that this talk about crypto first, right? When you think about Web3, there's always a discussion about crypto. And there's not as much discussion about the other use cases, about digital property rights in the metaverse or in gaming. Do you think that that acts sort of as a wall to other populations that maybe are not as financially savvy or don't have as much access to the information?
100%. I think it's an education layer that's missing. Even within crypto, so we spoke about tokenomics earlier, yeah. And I gave quite a long definition of what I felt tokenomics was. And there might be an underlying understanding of what it is, but we have different interpretations of what that looks like. We talk about digital property rights and gaming. You can argue gamers are the closest adopters to crypto because they understand this, but they don't. And it's a fundamental shift in mentality. Like if you're buying a skin on Fortnite, for example, you do not own that skin. You are renting it from that platform.
Yeah.
There is no ownership there. And then we talk about data, and I gave the example of WhatsApp earlier. These are people who understand the value of their data and they're still using WhatsApp. So I still think we have a way to go. But then we talk about, let's say, Axie Infinity, for example, in the rise of the previous bull run. Axie was one of the prominent players within that. But fundamentally, it wasn't necessarily for the gameplay. It was more for the case of people in Southeast Asia during COVID, that we might add as well, bearing in mind that they're quite a labor-intensive workforce.
Right.
It's not a welfare state, so there were no handouts. So it's all, how can I make money to survive? Well, I'm able to play this game, generate a few dollars in a week, at least at the beginning, and that's more than what I was earning as a laborer. And all of a sudden, this narrative of play to earn kicked off. Now, for me, that was a big moment in crypto. And people can argue that it was sustainable, sorry, it wasn't sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. It was a hypothesis, it was an idea that went out and we saw what worked and we also learned what didn't work. So it was a great experiment or example from that perspective. But what we saw was that if people are pushed into a difficult situation, they will play games to work.
Yeah.
And that becomes a means of income. And then we talk about hyperinflation in many different countries, and some countries have been forced to take on Bitcoin as a means of protecting their savings or being able to transact in a currency that preserves some form of value, even given its volatile nature, but yeah. Versus some fiat currencies are a lot more volatile than Bitcoin. So we are seeing a shift in narrative, but there is that education layer that's missing.
It's so funny you mentioned the example of the skins in Fortnite. I was just speaking to Liam before you came in, and he was asking, you know, what are digital property rights? I said, what were you playing before we came here? Fortnite. Okay. Did you have a skin? Yes. Do you own it? No, you don't own it. Right. And so it is sort of a channel, sort of a pathway to teach people about what digital property rights are. I was on LinkedIn last week and I posted that I remember very early on, one of my favorite games growing up was River City Ransom. Now, I don't know if you ever played this game.
I haven't.
Okay, so this game is like, it's a street fighting game. Think of Street Fighter, but in story mode as you go through. And it's you and another player, and basically you have things like chains and nunchucks, and you can, you know, beat money out of people, right?
I like this game.
It was great, right? It was before.
Pre-GTA by the sounds of it.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So you're going through different streets, beating up people for their money, and then you use the money to buy what you like. You buy skins. They weren't called skins then. They were just called like outfits or whatever. And you know, you were able to buy food, you were able to buy skills. But that created sort of like, it was always like you want to come back to the game to level up. You want to come back. I mean, not just to beat people, but you want to come back to see what else you can do. What else can you get from the game? And I sense that, you know, this sort of engagement in the game creates community, and it also pulls people in different ways. I mean, there is that monetization piece, but there's also other driving factors in that.
100%. I think when we think of games, we think of the game as the be all and end all, but it's a start point. And we've seen communities or meta games built around the game. You might have the core gamers, but like Twitch streamers, for example, and the audience, there were people who just watch Twitch streams for hours and maybe spend a fraction of that actually playing the game. Well, are they adding value to that ecosystem? Of course they're adding value to that ecosystem because they're spending their time, and fundamentally what everyone is after is time. How can we have people's eyes on our product versus another product, and then how are we able to monetize that? And that's really where Web3 and digital assets come in. Because if I have a fungible token, for example, it gives me a form of social equity within that ecosystem. So if I'm someone watching, I don't know, a Twitch stream for Fortnite, maybe with my tokens, I can vote on what the next skin is, or I can have a say in something, or at least I have that feeling that I have a voice and I'm part of an ecosystem, versus just being someone at the end of the supply chain where it's just extract, extract. Web2 is very extractive. Web3 really try to look at virtuous cycles where, or cyclical effects and positive network effects. And that's what the technology really allows us to do. We just haven't sold it in the right way as of yet.
Yeah. It's funny when I hear you talk about this. I mean, I relate to it very much because I have teenage sons, and I also, you know, is into gaming and stuff. And I'm wondering, you know, those people who are in corporate and who are like, well, it's just gaming, you know, and maybe they've seen their kids on iPads play, but they don't really see the full potential of gaming. They don't really understand where gaming is taking us as a society. What would you say to kind of enlighten them on that?
They're missing the bigger picture. There's more than just what's in the spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And obviously from a corporate perspective, it's always about the bottom line, which is understandable for a business. But then sometimes you do have to take a step back and understand that we live in a very complex society today versus maybe 20 or 30 years ago, the rise in technology. And just the things that, the aspects that we spend our time on, there are so many more distractions from that. So there's so many more games, there are so many more things where I can, I don't know, maybe I'm pro green, maybe I want fossil fuels, maybe I support this team. There are so many things that we can be vocal about, but games is something that actually unites a lot of people together. And then as the reference I was giving earlier, like people who watch the streams, maybe people who create the fan generated art and user generated content around that, there are then these ecosystems that are there. And it's time really the corporates stop thinking about how can we just extract value, but more so how can we provide value so that value can grow. So then the underlying asset has a lot more value and everyone wins. And I think really what crypto allows is for win-win situations. And that's this virtuous cycle that we're referring to, or the blue ocean mindset,
yeah,
versus moats, silos, red ocean, yeah, where it's me against you, versus it's all of us against the world. Or why even against the world? It's just all of us to make this a better place where we value each other's contributions.
Yeah, that's so true. And I want to talk a bit about this blue ocean mindset. So I was raised in Connecticut, grew up in a very rural farmland sort of environment, and then ventured out to China and spent some time in Singapore, and now I'm here in Dubai. And I definitely see that, you know, looking back on where I was raised, that there are huge populations of people that are very much being left out of this conversation. And I wanted to talk a little bit about representation in Web3 and how we are bringing, you know, those people to the table. And it sounds like, you know, what you guys are building is, you know, different channels to do that, whether it's through gaming or through metaverse. And how does that connect with your own story? So, see, I threw one in on you there.
Did,
yeah,
you
yeah.
Did, no, I like it. I like
you
it.
Didn't see that coming.
So, no, I didn't. It was a curveball. But we like curveballs. I think, like, for me personally, growing up in school, there were like four or five main groups. You're either with the cool kids or the kids who like playing football. Not American football, but soccer football.
Okay.
The distinction there. Or it was like the geeky nerds who just liked to sit down and do clever stuff.
Yeah.
Or the kids who wouldn't fit into any other group. And I sort of would wrote all the kids who, like, I'm 35, so Pokemon was big, Harry Potter was big when I was growing up. And it's like, right, let's sit and play on our Game Boys. And I sort of had an affiliation with the majority of these groups. I was really good at football, so I'd fit in with the cool kids at periods of time. But I love being nerding out, being a bit geeky, so I'd spend time with that. But it became difficult to associate to a single tribe, where it was more like, I'm in this tribe for a bit, I'm in that tribe for a bit. And there's a lot of, especially I feel, and we can even argue now, but back then, it's you had to fit somewhere.
Yeah.
Whereas today, and especially in Web3, there aren't judgments made on what you look like, on your gender, these aspects. It's more so on what's the value that you're bringing. So it's really given a level playing field. It was actually the conversation I was having earlier prior to coming here today was with someone, and I think there was a few of us where each person is very senior or runs a big company within the space. And we're all sitting down, t-shirts, shorts, jeans, having a chat that anyone walking by, you wouldn't think that this is an insane table of people having a chat. And that could be from net worth, it could be from the intelligence there, it could be from the influence that's there, just depending on what rose tinted glasses you have on that you're passing that judgment from. We just look like 5-6 everyday guys sitting down having a chat. So I feel that the representation is more equal. It's not equal enough yet. The equality isn't there yet, because I still feel there are minorities that are underrepresented.
Right.
But I feel, given where we're going, and I touched on maybe the governance aspect where everyone has a voice.
Right.
We're not there yet, but we are getting there. And it's at that point where, and what I'm going to say is going to become a paradox, but essentially it's a democratized monopoly where everyone has skin in the game, but it's a monopoly that everyone has control over. So maybe the corporates, it might blow their minds a bit. It's like, wait, how can you have both? But that's fundamentally what we can have. And at that point, because everyone has a voice, doesn't make a difference what gender you are, doesn't make a difference what the color of your skin is, what religion you abide by, if any, where you come from. It's, I have my voice based on the value that I bring. And there are no preconditions that determine where what my path looks like through life. So yeah, sort of mixing a bit of my experience growing up and also what I'm seeing in the space.
Absolutely. And that totally resonates with me, because, you know, I also didn't fit in growing up. I mean, I probably fit into the fourth group, the group, the people that don't fit in. That was me growing up. And so I do see that in web. I see the intention to be inclusive, and I see that, but I also see, like, when I do look at panels, I see they are mostly men. That still exists because, you know, it's tech, of course, and a bit of finance. Go ahead.
No, absolutely not. So I think that there is a big challenge there. I think, I know when I first got into the space, and this is as a man, when I'd go to meetups and I didn't know anyone there, I had hesitations about, do I go speak to people? Mm-hmm. Most of these people are in suits. And I had a fear, so I could only imagine what it would be like for a woman coming in to a room full of men and then feeling like, what am I doing here?
Right.
But I also know that there's been some initiatives, like we have a group in London called London Women Leading Web3, for example, and it started out by, it was a WhatsApp group of women thinking, okay, well, as opposed to me going alone, I've met you, let's all connect, I'm going to this event. And they show up in numbers, safety in numbers. And it started off like that, and now it's a group, I think, 50 plus members as of now.
Wow.
This isn't a shill, but it's just given we're on this topic. And they're all C-level, or not in general, but it's more a case of a safe place for them to come together and also be able to go to different events. But then it gives them a voice and a platform. So when there is an event happening, we can have someone on this panel, we can have someone on that panel. I do believe there's an innate fear, and it's not just in women, it's just in minorities in general, to go into something new, just because of the way we've been preconditioned. But once you're in the space, as long as that initial experience is a positive experience, in general, it is a positive experience. Again, outside of the bad actors that we spoke about right at the beginning, because everyone is looking to add value in general. Everyone is looking to, how can we help each other versus what can I extract from you to help me on my journey? And there are actors like that in the space, but there's a lot less versus in the conventional sense.
Yeah, and Dubai, I think we need something like that, Dubai. Women in Web3, you may hear some updates from me on that, but for sure, I mean, we definitely have it, you know, particularly out here and in this region. It's very, male dominated in terms of the space, but there are a number of women leaders in Web3 out here as well that are making waves.
Absolutely, and I think it's, especially for the, I heard the stat yesterday that every 14-year-old has only known a world of Bitcoin in it, which is super interesting, because by the time these guys are 17, or these guys and girls are 17, and they have a bit more autonomy over their finances, which they probably do already, we'll start seeing more of a transition. So then a slight tangent to the point we were saying, but I just feel that it's happening. And again, sort of, start again, apologies. So with the reference to having leaders in the space, the more thought leaders that are out there that are from, that are women or are from minority groups, the more it will inspire confidence
right.
in the younger generation growing up, where it's, I'm not just looking at a bunch of white middle-aged men who have no association and no understanding of my kind of life, where I can look in to other leaders in the space and be like, I can associate with this person, I can associate with that person.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer to that. Again, we're not there, but I feel with any new technology, it does take
10-20
years for some form of understanding or adoption to hit. Normally you need standards. So I think I think that was, what, 27 years between the internet being created, and I think it's a TCP protocol coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it takes time for something,
for that to happen.
For that yeah. to happen. We just live in a day and age where we want instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if I'm waiting 2 minutes for my food to heat up in the microwave, it's too long. So what do you mean I have to wait a decade for something to happen?
Yeah.
But we fast forward, what, the first Bitcoin block was mined January 2009, or in December 2023. So we've come a long way since then. And we look at all of the big brands looking into the space, like Nike have their own collection, Adidas have their own collection. I think one of the bigger travel, is it Trivago? It might be, I'm not sure. Or Travala, one of them have their NFT, Trekkie NFT, that's come out as well. Mm-hmm. All of the big banks who were saying crypto was a scam in 2017, 2018, all now have trading
now
desks.
Yeah, now they're jumping in, right?
Absolutely. All the central banks, or that, the more prominent central banks, are looking at CBDCs, mm-hmm. which again, don't fit in with the ethos of crypto, but at least it's leveraging the technology. So we're actually seeing something that was written off 5 or 6 years ago. Everyone is realizing actually this isn't going away, and how can we take advantage of this? But it's changing that mindset of how can we take advantage of this to how can we provide value to our users. So they're no longer seen as users, but they're seen as members of the community.
Right.
And I think that there is a mindset shift that needs to happen for adoption to truly take place, if it's going to be top down from the institutions and the brands.
Absolutely. And even though people talk about education, it's how you educate.
Yep.
It's not in a lecture format like you or I may have experienced, where you're sitting and you're taking notes. It's more of engagement. It's bringing people in. It's how you onboard. Can you talk a little bit about EdTech and some of the things that Animoca Brands is involved in terms of educating other
Absolutely.
Groups?
I think I'm not going to be as monotone now. But, but all jokes aside, so education is something, me having been an educator for a decade prior to pivoting full-time into this role, it's one of the oldest institutions alongside finance, so it's one of the hardest institutions to shake up. And as soon as I hit senior management, you can see the red tape bureaucracy. It was very, very clear to see. And the impact to make real change didn't exist. So coming into Web3, yeah, again, the founder, he's a true advocate and believer in education. So we knew there was always a plan around education. About a year and a half ago, we acquired an edtech platform called TinyTap. Just a quick 30 seconds, TinyTap, the core business model behind it is teachers create content, they create lessons, they have a no-code tooling, and that lesson is gamified. And then parents or schools pay a subscription fee. The kids go on, they play games where they're fundamentally learning, mm-hmm. and then the profit that's generated, there's a revenue share between the platform and between the content creators. That's the business model, that's Web2. It fits in with the ethos of Web3 and was one of the core driving forces behind the acquisition. So now that we have this platform, what can we do from a tokenization aspect? So we looked at the idea of the revenue being generated, because as of now, the majority of cryptocurrencies have a speculative nature. How can we have something that rewards teachers, but also rewards people coming in from an investment standpoint, and also that adds value to the platform? Again, this virtual cycle, this win-win,
right.
that we keep referring to. So we leveraged NFTs. Now, for those not familiar with NFTs, without going into the jargon, it's a digital container. And what we've seen people put inside are JPEGs as of now. But you can essentially, anything that can be coded, you can put that inside an NFT. So that's, I want us to broaden our horizons on how we think, or what we think of an NFT as. So we took the revenue being generated, 80% of that, and we wrapped it into an NFT, and we called that a publisher NFT. And what it allowed is for investors coming in to now act as co-publishers for this content. And again, we didn't reinvent the wheel. We took something that exists in music and we just made it work for education. We sold 12 NFTs. We raised just under $400,000. 50% of that went to the teachers. We had an elementary school teacher walk away with, I think, just over $37,000. That's more than her annual salary. So when we talk about making a difference, we made a difference. And again, that was an experiment. It was a hypothesis and it was a huge success. So we thought, excellent. We now have an idea of what we can do. This was this time last year when we dropped those publisher NFTs. So we decided, let's build an education protocol and just go straight in. But with anything, it takes time to build. So we launched the token. We had very great success around the fundable token. And the core of the fundable token is actually a governance token to begin with. But what launching the token allowed us to do from the liquidity that was generated was create two $10 million funds. One fund is the Global Educator Fund, and it's really aimed at giving out grants to teachers to come and create educational content. So it's saying, we will pay you, we will reward you for the content that you are generating as an onboardment mechanism. But what excites me even more is with the other $10 million fund, we created an accelerator. And the core focus of the accelerator is onboarding 100 edtech companies into the space. We know TinyTap was the start, but for us to build an ecosystem, you cannot have an ecosystem with just one business.
Right.
So the purpose of this is to bring in the right founders, the right mindset, with it could be revenue generating, it could be pre-seed, doesn't make a difference what stage they're at, and we will take them through the accelerator, teach them about Web3, the different kinds of integrations, and at the end of it, they'll get some form of financing, from a grant all the way up to debt equity financing. So really bringing the best of Web2 and Web3. And we were two cohorts in, and it's 10 cohorts in total across 18 months. We're two cohorts in, and it's been an amazing success so far. And we're just seeing the connectivity between the founders, extra ideas being generated, and it really then comes into how can we've given that initial value add, and now they're beginning to add the value. And again, it takes time. And in time, we'll see what will happen within this ecosystem. But it's an ecosystem that started off with an idea that was a success. Fast forward a year from that initial idea, we have a token trading maybe with a market cap of 500 to 600 million as of now. Mm-hmm. I think at peak was 1.6 billion, which is insane. Probably doesn't mean anything to the majority of the audience, but to us, they're really good metrics of success. And now it's just sustainable growth moving forward and engaging with the right stakeholders. If it's the edtech businesses, if it's the teachers, if it's the students, and really building that ecosystem. I refer to them as ecosystems. It's underpinned by an economy, right, naturally, but it's an economy that hasn't scaled or is scaling as of now, as we start to understand from the data points how people are interacting. How can we reward? We talk about incentives in the space a lot. But incentives is a good way to bring people in, but fundamentally, there needs to be a motivation. In the same way you went back to play that game over and over again, because you were motivated to do so.
I was motivated to beat my brother with a chain. But yes.
There you go. There wasn't a carrot that do this and you can make $20 or $100 or something like that. There was a core driver inside. And with education, we all have that.
Absolutely.
We all want to make a difference. We know education is outdated. We know there needs to be change. We also know Rome wasn't built in a day.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny when I think of Animoca Brands and what you guys are doing, not just with this education focus and the accelerator, but generally in terms of the portfolio. So many founders are probably very interested in working with Animoca Brands and they want to, you know, either join or present their ideas. What are some of the things that you would look for in terms of tokenomics? And you've talked about some of these things, but if you had to give them like the top three things that, you know, you should be strong on these points if you're going to come to us with an idea or with a small ecosystem.
So every few months I have to up the number we have in our portfolio by 50. So we have over 500 portfolio companies now, which is insane. And it's a big part for the t-shirt I'm wearing today, Mochaverse, but I guess we can get into Mochaverse later. Yeah. I guess number one, it's what fundamentally is your value add? Like, what are you bringing to the ecosystem? Are you just creating something that's been created before, and there's 50 different variations of what you have, which is fine. If yours genuinely is the best, then you have the traction to prove it. The other aspect is, for me, mindset. Like there are different mindsets within a space, but having this growth mindset, having the mindset of being the blue ocean, like we were discussing earlier, is imperative to success. And a lot of the time, from an investment standpoint, it's not just the underlying product, it's a team, because this team has to deliver, they have to ship, they have to be the driving force behind that. So do you have the right ethos, the right mindset, the right drive to come in? And the third one, if you're raising funds, please do not sell a lot of your tokens to the investors, because you've killed the token economy before it's even had a chance to succeed. What we're seeing now is a lot more equity investments with a token warrant, where you're giving the investors protection on the equity and they get some upside in the token. But in doing so, you're allowing the majority of the token to go out to the community, to the ecosystem, as that product or platform scales, which we haven't really seen a lot of longevity from token economies. Mm-hmm. What we've seen are what look like pump and dumps, because it's investors hold a large proportion, the lockups. So with tokens, that there tends to be a lockup period to give time for the ecosystem to grow, but those lockups tend to be short. And what we've seen in crypto, adoption hasn't happened yet. Those people buying the digital assets are very different to the people who you want to be using your platform, unless your platform is Web3 specific. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, not an exact science.
But there's so much wisdom in that third, in all the points, but specifically that third point there, because that is the longevity mindset, right? Yeah. I mean, that is the idea that you are building for the long run, number one. Number two, people who pretend to or may say that they're invested in your ecosystem might not be. And that's a totally different persona than your community, than your members. I think that's a point that many people miss.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think probably one more thing is a lot of founders tend to either be very proactive or very reactive. I think in this space, you have to be both. You have to have your roadmap. You have to know, you have to start with the end in sight. And it's absolutely fine to pivot because market conditions change, narratives change. So you have to be able to be malleable from that nature as well. So it's a combination of being proactive and reactive at the same time.
That's wisdom right there. You guys better be listening because you're not going to get any more direct information there. I want to talk a bit about Mochaverse and what's really happening there. I mean, I think that there has been so much growth and evolution, not just through the portfolio companies, but what is being built through Mochaverse. Can you talk about that and then also like community engagement in Mochaverse and where you see that headed?
Absolutely. So we spoke about how big the portfolio is, and it's always been how can we connect all of these different moving parts together? And that's a big challenge, especially when you have a portfolio of that size or founders of different mindsets and thought processes. So the Mochaverse, the idea of the Mochaverse was born. And it's Animoca, Mochaverse, that's where the name comes from. And it's how can we connect not just companies within the Animoca ecosystem, but also companies outside of the ecosystem. So we have The plan is to connect companies within the Animoca ecosystem, but also different projects and companies outside, so we can have that virtuous cycle where what we've seen is we've cracked, when I say we as a space, we've cracked activation, we're yet to crack retention. And that's because people are running after or following ROI. If ROI is here, I'm here for a bit. If ROI is there, I move on to the next ecosystem. But how can we design that, given that's the incentives for people in Web3, in a way that makes sense, in a way that's sustainable, in a way that we can tie in all of the different aspects, if it's gaming, if it's infrastructure, that's based on the different value offerings. And that's the core underlying principle of Mochaverse. We're thinking of, at least the front end, is like your airline loyalty point model, where I come in and I complete different activations. It might be in games across different partners, and I'm able to accrue these loyalty points, which we're calling realm points, to fit in with the lore of the Mochaverse. If you've seen some of the artwork, it's out there. It's meant to be out there because it's really meant to try and change your perception on what Web3 is. Web3 is very different, and we're trying to do something different in that sense.
Governance is also cool, though. I mean, in terms of people's, you know, that motivator that you talked about. I mean, if I know that I have the ability to kind of direct or to, you know, chip in terms of where the Mochaverse is headed, governance would be a very attractive idea.
Absolutely. I think so. Governance, the theory of governance is amazing, but we're missing something very important, which is reputation. Mm. Because when you think of governance in a crypto economic state, it's liquid democracy. Liquid because the assets that I hold are liquid, at least when they're fungible tokens. But the current way governance works is by something called token-weighted voting. So it's I hold one token, it enables me with one vote. And there are challenges with that because you have whales, so those people who accumulate a large amount of tokens are able to swing the vote. In addition to that, if you're having proposals happening every week, there is fatigue for voters to be coming to be coming in and voting on a weekly basis, given that we all have real lives and jobs to live as well. So we're getting there, and the reputation area is super important, but that's something else that Mochaverse enables. So we recently launched the Mochaverse identity, and it's fundamentally a layer to be able to capture all of your different interactions. So again, we talk about data. Data is very important.
Right.
So that we can begin to build a social graph or a reputation graph of sorts based on your interactions. And at some point in the future, that may or may not have an impact on what governance looks like moving forward. We also know that governance needs to be simple. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a big fan of quadratic voting, and maybe we won't get into that. But it's when we're given binary choices, it gives us Brexit. It gives us Trump. And the list goes on. So how can we move away from binary choices? Binary choices are very polarizing, which is why you see politics is either on the far right or center left in general. And the majority of people do not sit on the far right. It's a bell curve. It's a Gaussian curve. It's the majority of people sit in the middle. But because the middle has become so polluted of all of these different things that you have to go to an extreme to feel like your voice is being heard. So it's at least that's in the conventional, in the Web 2 sense. In Web 3, it's very, very different because each person has a voice. But again, it's making sure that all voices are heard. And it's not necessarily the bigger my wallet or my holding is, the bigger the voice I have. Because if there's three of us and you're the lawyer, for example, but two of us can outvote you on something you have the knowledge for, that doesn't make sense. But that's where the reputation layer comes in. So that's another aspect of Mochaverse. But I do want to take a step back as well and talk about the distribution of the NFTs. So we have 8,888 NFTs. And given this started within the Animoca community, all of the NFTs were distributed initially to our portfolio companies, our subsidiaries, and employees. And for the employees, they were given an option. They had one for free, but they could also buy one. And then for portfolio companies and subsidiaries, it was 3 and 3. And fundamentally, we wanted to seed it with our ecosystem, but we also wanted to give that slight excess to allow supporters of the Animoca ecosystem to be able to come in and buy and show support to the ecosystem and enter the Mochaverse realm, if you like. And the reason why I'm mentioning the distribution is a lot of times when projects distribute, it's always for fundraising mechanisms. Yeah. It's I'm selling NFTs. We saw it in the height of the bull market, selling pictures of dogs, apes, you name it, raising millions and millions of dollars, and a majority of these failed because they didn't know what to do with the money, or they exit scammed, to speak, because all of a sudden, here's a cool idea, here's some neat marketing around it. Oh wow, I'm now sitting on $7 million in Ethereum or in another underlying asset. Well, then the genuine founders as well, because they were sitting in an underlying asset that was volatile, when the market dropped, those $7 million became $400,000, for example. And all of a sudden, your three-year burn has turned into maybe three months burn. And so then there's lots of learnings there as well. But again, for us, it wasn't the fundraising aspect. The funds that were raised went into the treasury. So when the governance does come around, we know that there's a treasury that's been preceded. But it's how can we connect the ecosystem? How can we have a fair distribution amongst the NFTs? And really, how can we continue to provide value and start building that reputation layer?
You know, everything that you've mentioned today, you know, it's just systemically different than what I think the perception actually is about Web3 in terms of reinvesting in employees, in terms of having a long game and thinking about sustainability, in terms of using data to build out future projects and test and use a scientific method. Do you think that is really the reason why Animoca Brands has been around for so long? I mean, there are companies that have, you know, been overnight successes, and then the next, 3-6 months later, they're gone. What really would you say is probably one or two of the driving forces behind the longevity?
I genuinely feel it's the ethos, and it's exemplified best by Yat. Yeah, so the co-founder and its people buy into his vision. I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, that's all right.
So it's when you buy into a vision, you believe in something. And it's not just people at Animoca, it's people outside believe in the vision. And I feel that's one of the core drivers behind it. And it's easy to say this is our vision, but then we've also, with investments like OpenSea, like Sandbox, acquisition of TinyTap, for example, DareWise, I can name a number of different investments that we've made that were made maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago and are continuing to build today, continuing to provide value. They're still going forward in addition to the newer investments that are being made to add value to the existing ecosystem. So it's not just a case of we have a vision, it's we have a vision and we're generally doing something about it to move in the right direction. So I think that's probably what underpins everything that Animoca does. And then we can get into the nitty-gritty of the data, of the internal structures, right, and things like that that allow a company of our size to be effective. Obviously, that layer is there as well. We went through hyper-expansion, and I think we 3x'd in size over 6 to 9 months. So there were some growing pains there, but we managed to get through those growing pains, and there is always light at the end of the tunnel. So I feel the right style of management, the right ethos, having the buy-in from the staff, from your subsidiaries, from your portfolio companies in general. And it's a recipe for success. I mean, the easy part is getting to the top, the hard part is staying there. Yeah. And for us, it's not we're at the top as AB, it's we are at the top as an industry and as our portfolio. And how can we continue to be leaders and innovators within the space and continue to add value?
Well, I'm a huge fan and I love to see the growth. And particularly as you mentioned, it really is the way that it's growing. It's the manner in which it's growing. And, you know, for me as someone who's quote unquote underrepresented in the space, it definitely is something that we like to watch and we like to look for. And I just thank you so much for your time here today and coming in and sharing what Animoca Brands is doing.
Thank you so much for having me. And I really hope this was educational and insightful to the audience as well.
It was. I'm sure you blew some minds with your stats and your approach. Thank you so much, Mo Ezzeldine. Thank you.
Thank you.